The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with John Couch, John on the other side of the glass, producing and engineering our program. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on this Friday, October the 18th. 2019. We are live each weekday and have been here with the radio project since we launched in January of 2011. We're here during the noon hour on 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening, and all of our podcasts. My assistant, Rosemary Brandt, does such a nice job getting all of the programs up. I would say on average, they're up within a couple of hours after the show. So we've got them all up there for you, archived at buckmastershow.com. Friday is our media day, where we do a shout out to some of the media people who support us. We've been so fortunate over the years to have the support of Dylan Smith and TucsonSentinel.com, Dan Shear, Green Valley News, Saharita Sun. The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Friday Focus interview today. It's been a while since the city manager joins us, so it's always good to see Mike Ortega. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Joining me in studio is Joe Ferguson, a writer, political writer mainly, but he also covers City Hall for, I guess that's political.
Yeah, can, very much can be.
Very much for the Arizona Daily Star. So, Mr. Ortega, Manager Ortega, I want to get an update on the pilot program, the e-scooters. How's it gone? I think we're 5 weeks into it, something like that.
We are, Bill, and it's gone well, relatively speaking. And the reason I say that is we have had some complaints. But overall, I think the intent of the scooter program, as it's been introduced across the nation, really, is disrupting the way people see transportation. You know, how they commute, how they actually get from point A to point B. Just a couple of numbers. We have about 46,000 trips that have occurred over the last few weeks. Average daily trips are about 1,300, 1,350 to be exact. We've launched, they've launched about 600 scooters. They've actually deployed those. Each company can launch 750, and we've got two companies right now, Bird and Razor, that are doing this. So overall, we have seen a fair amount of use. The complaints have really been about folks misusing them, riding them on sidewalks, double riding them, leaving them thrown, if you will, in the way, so that it causes some challenges there. But in terms of the number of complaints, we've gotten like 35. But certainly,
wow,
always interested.
I would have thought there would have been more, but
now keep in mind those are coming into the city offices, and we will be getting a report from the companies themselves, and I'll give you that information for the listeners. So the Bird contact info, their phone number is 866-205-2442. That's 866-205-2442.
And that's Bird, B-I-R-D.
B-I-R-D. And they can also email their complaints or concerns to hello@bird.co.
So this is a big national company.
And I assume that's Com. This is a national company.
Wow.
So Razor, which is the other company, their phone number is 833-LAST-MILE. So it's 833-LAST-MILE. And you can also email them at sharesupport@razorusa.com.
Okay.
So it's still very early. I can't give you a thumbs up or thumbs down. I think we've seen some good utilization at this time. And so we'll just kind of keep monitoring it. It's a six-month pilot, so we'll be able to report back in a couple months and really see where we're headed.
Joe, have you seen them around town?
I've seen them? Hell, I've been on one. So...
Was your experience?
My experience was good, but I think that the Cushing Street between in front of the TCC might need a little bit of paving. So that's what I learned from them. Not a lot of support on these particular vehicles.
Where do you return them to? Just leave them or?
You just leave them basically where you're finished. You know, so you end at point B, wherever that is. And
they come around.
Yeah, and so someone, they actually have folks that come around and pick them up and charge them. And then they deliver them back at specific locations. And so when you see them, you know, parked along the street in a very orderly fashion, you can tell that's where they were deposited from the overnight charging station, the overnight charging occurred.
Gentlemen, okay. I have to ask, though, I keep seeing them in front of the jail. I'm confused as to what I'm seeing there.
Jailbreak.
How about, not sure, Joe. That is an interesting point B.
790-2040. Any questions for the city manager? He'd be delighted to attempt to answer your question. Joe, go ahead. You're next. We've got a lot to talk about.
I do. And so I've taken an interest in housing. And so a couple weeks back, the Daily Star, my colleague and I, Patty, wrote about some issues in terms of Section 8 housing. And I've taken an interest in a property off of Alvernon and Blackledge that seems to be mostly boarded up, but it's used by your housing department. I've spoken to your director, Liz, about various aspects of the housing program, but I guess one of the things is it sounds like there's some resources here that have been neglected over time. And, you know, now that the city's taking a more appropriate look at them, you know, what does that look like for budgeting? I mean, how does federal budgeting work in terms of housing over the last decade from your vantage point?
Sure, Joe, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a long-winded answer because I think there's multiple pieces. You can cut me off as usual, right?
Yeah.
So keep in mind that the housing program is actually a federal program, and so we get dollars on an annual basis from the Fed to perform these services. And what we've observed is over time, our portfolio has actually expanded or stayed the same, but the dollars on a per-unit basis for maintenance and so forth have gone down. And that's very, very troubling because what's happened is the federal government, by doing that, is shifting that burden, if you will, that cost to the local governments. And that makes it really challenging. However, there is a strong need. And as you mentioned, you'd met with Liz Morales, who's our new housing director, very optimistic about her leadership and some of the innovative opportunities that she brings. But ultimately, it is a conversation that will be with the council. The city council and the mayor really need to weigh in on where does this fit into the priorities of this community on a macro scale. So that's what we're doing now is really dissecting. I know the piece that you spoke about or you wrote about, Joe, and certainly not ideal, but we've got situations like that elsewhere. And so we're looking hard at how do we prioritize the needs with the resources that we have.
Go ahead, Joe.
So, I mean, I don't know who the next mayor is going to be, but maybe Bill can tell us. But at the same time, I have to tell you that, you know, I've talked to council members and they've, you know, suggested and hinted that they're looking at maybe one-time influx from general fund dollars. And so is that something that's even possible given the strain on those dollars?
Sure, and I can tell you that this is not a one-off in terms of one individual on the council. It's been pretty unified in terms of concern and frustration, quite frankly, with the way that we have approached this or have seen this from the Fed. So the question that I've gotten is, how can we invest local dollars in some of these efforts? And so is the key word or the key piece to your comment there, Joe, is one time. And I think that if we can infuse some dollars now to give us a shot in the arm, there's opportunity for us. But keep in mind that long-term maintenance picture is the one that I focus on and it concerns me. So one of the things that we're going to be doing as a part of the upcoming budget, and be happy to come back and chat with you, Bill, after that process starts, is to look at how could we allocate dollars, one-time dollars, out of our reserve to address some of these needs that are just staring us in the face.
And how many units is the city responsible for?
I'm going to go on a limb, but it's over 2,000, as I recall. 2,000 doors is what I recall. It's over that.
And how many maintenance people do you have? And this, again, is a lot to do with federal dollars, right?
Sure. Not enough. How's that?
maintenance people that have to take care of several thousand units.
Sure. So currently, I think we have about five folks that are assigned.
Wow.
And that's a you know, think through that, right? How do you actually go around and make sure that I'm going to call it the proper maintenance is occurring when you just don't have the dollars that are allocated there. And so, again, it's really a macro level challenge of what those Fed dollars look like, what's the expectation and the strings attached to those dollars, and what do we need to do locally, because the need is there. I mean, we've got waiting lists. We've got folks that are literally figuratively beating the door, if you will, to get in. And so we've got to make sure that we somehow are able to address that.
And we're halfway through almost this budget year.
Correct.
And you start thinking about the budget in early January or what?
So I usually give the staff about a week off in July and say, okay, we need to get back on it, because it's an ongoing discussion. It's not a one and done. It can't be. It's got to be a continuous review. And so that's really the way I've approached it, because otherwise it becomes, you know, kind of like, whew, you know, we're finished with that. Well, we never really and truly finished. We're always looking for ways to make some adjustments and tweaks and improvements all the way through. And what ultimately gets in front of the council is many, many months of conversation and engagement and dialogue about what the priorities are and how those resources can be allocated.
City Manager Mike Ortega is with us. It's 12:16 on the Buckmaster Show. Joe Ferguson will stick around with us, and we'll, as will the city manager. We're going to take our break right here on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back. 790-2040. If you have any comments or questions for the city manager, now's your opportunity. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It's the Buckmaster Show. It's our Friday Focus interview. Each Friday, we bring in a newsmaker, take a deep dive into what's going on. Today, it is the city manager, Mike Ortega. Mike is coming up on, let me take a guess here. Boy, how time is 4 years about right?
It's actually four plus and counting.
Wow. What was your inception?
July of 2015.
Whoa.
So, been a little better than 4 years, coming up on four and a half there, Bill.
Wow. Do you ice skate, Mike?
Have you tried? I have seen an ice rink. I've been to a Roadrunners game, but I wouldn't say I'm a desert rat, born and raised in the desert, so not much for ice skating.
Joe Ferguson with us from the Arizona Daily Star. Joe and
Wisconsin born. I've been on the ice.
You have been. Oh. I thought definitely, and I'm from Illinois. Of course, I've been on the ice. We used to, hose down. There was a vacant lot. We just hosed down the lot, and we'd have a rink. Well, it's a little more sophisticated now for the city of Tucson because we are actually going to have an ice rink in downtown Tucson just in time for the holidays.
We are, Bill, and it's a temporary rink. It's not intended to be permanent, but it is intended to provide folks with an opportunity to do something a little different. So went down and had a conversation with our partners at Rio Nuevo, and they decided that it was something that might be of value, and so they partnered. They're actually providing the capital to install a temporary rink, and it'll be there across the street from the Hotel Congress. There's a vacant lot there, and it'll be there. And the goal is to have it up and running on the weekend after Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and go through the weekend after New Year's. So, during the holiday period for a couple months, give people an opportunity to come down and sport some ice skating. And the beauty of it is we'll have equipment to rent, so people can rent their skates.
I mean, unless you're like Joe Ferguson, who brought his ice skates with him from Wisconsin, he can take them down there.
Yeah, but they're a little rusty, so.
But we're really excited. Again, it's just an opportunity to do something a little different, and we're excited about providing an opportunity for the residents.
Okay, Joe Ferguson, what do you got?
Well, I guess we should talk about your new fire chief. So
I'm up for that.
You've got a brand new fire chief, and I am sure he has got a multi-page wish list that was put in his email box the day he got there. So what are some of the challenges facing the fire department other than those 1,200 Razor scooters you put on the streets?
Absolutely. So Chuck Ryan, Charles Ryan the third, has joined us. We actually went through his pinning ceremony, and his wife Suzanne and mother-in-law Terry were here. We're here on Monday, and it was a great ceremony. But we're really excited to have him on board. He's actually got a Juris Doctor degree, so he's a lawyer, and recovering lawyer is what I call him. Very smart guy. We're really excited about the leadership experience that he brings and has demonstrated in Fairfax County. That's where he comes from. But some of the challenges, obviously, are how do we deal with as an example, the number of 911 calls that we get on a daily basis that are non-emergent. It's tough when you're already stretched very thin, don't have enough resource out in the field, and you get calls that are non-emergent that are expecting a firefighter or a paramedic to attend.
You have a pilot program in place now for some rescue vehicles. Has the new chief been supportive of this kind of
Absolutely. And I think that, again, what I've challenged him to do, and so the list was actually really, really short. What I've said is I want you to challenge the way we do business and look hard at how we provide services to this community. And it's not about, just change for change's sake, but let's talk about, what are the issues that are out there and what can we do up to and including engaging the community to help with some of these programs. And we've already got a very successful TC3 program where we are able to provide information to callers on some of the services that are within the community, those kind of things, because oftentimes you don't require a paramedic or a firefighter. You have other needs, and that's fine, and we appreciate them calling, but we've got to make sure that we save those highly trained professionals for when they're needed.
Unfortunately, in our healthcare system, some people do call 911 rather than go to like a doctor appointment or something. They'll call and want the paramedics to come out and take a look at them, and that's not what their function is for. That's not what it's about.
Just to give you an idea, yeah. And we're dissecting and scrubbing the data, but it looks like about 30% of the calls that come into 911 are non-emergent. You know, they're folks that ran out of medicine.
I knew it was a significant number. I didn't know it was, almost one in three.
Right. It's huge. And so, you know, part of it, Bill, keep in mind that as a society, we've encouraged people to call 911 for many years.
Sure.
We actually, put out PSAs and so forth, call 911, because people were afraid to, right?
Yeah.
Well, we've did such a great job that now folks call it for a variety of reasons, up to and including, you know, I don't know where my doctor's office is. I don't know where some of these other things are, right? And so what we need to do is, and this is one of the things I've challenged the chief to think about, is how do we start a conversation with the community so that they're educated on when you call 911? We want people to call 911 that need those types of services. Because then it really starts to bottleneck the system, and then you have other challenges.
All right, let's go to the live line, 790-2040. Kristen is with us. Go ahead, Kristen.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Mr. Ferguson and Mrs. McElroy from the Daily Star wrote an article a few weeks ago about the city being behind on paying Section 8 vouchers and processing price increases and doing inspections, putting some tenants at risk of being homeless or losing their apartments or being evicted. I wanted to know what the city is doing to fix that and what the status of that is. Thank you.
Sure, Kristen. Thanks for asking that. As I mentioned before, we just hired a new director, Liz Morales, and she has, that was one of her immediate tasks, is get a handle on this situation and look for ways and strategies to address it, but not just in a futuristic manner of, hey, let's develop a plan. Let's actually start looking hard at it. Some of the things that we've seen is the market as a whole is changing, is shifting based on how the economy has gone. But some of the processing pieces we own, and we've got to make sure that we are putting emphasis on it, not only because it's the livelihood of the landlord, but also because, as you said, it could cause us some grief with the folks that would otherwise be housed, and we don't want that either. So we're putting some serious look at that and resources internally. I've allocated some internal staff to go over and help Liz deal with some of those issues, because I'm hearing them daily from some of the other landlords across the community.
How is the recycling going now? It's twice a month. Many complaints?
So we've actually had fairly good success, and the success is not necessarily on the complaints. It's how many people put their recycle bins out on the day that they weren't supposed to, right? And so we have found that the vast majority of the neighborhoods are not only compliant, but they understand what we're trying to do, have not received much in the way of complaints. We just started a couple of weeks ago, so I don't have data, if you will, that I can tell you other than anecdotally the drivers have seen that most neighborhoods complied with the every other week pickup.
Joe?
I just wanted to get a sense on, you know, what the volume has been in terms of that, those phone calls into City Hall, though. I mean, are you getting complaints from people who are just saying, listen, I can't live off twice a month, or has it been pretty receptive so far?
Very few, Joe. We like I say, we it's only been going on for a couple of weeks, so I don't think that it's matured enough for folks to be able to say I can't or have some input yet. But we've gotten very few calls up to now.
Okay.
All right, John. Do we have? We've got another call. Ken, let's go to Ken. Go ahead, Ken.
Hello. Good morning to you.
Good morning or good afternoon.
Or
whatever.
My issue, and this is goes for the county too, that in the university, the maintenance crews, for example, use their vehicles as their brake speak, and run them regardless of the weather, whether it's cold or hot or what have you. And there's certainly enough city buildings and fast food and what have you, you know, if it's so severe weather-wise, you know, that they need to be inside during their breaks.
Hmm. I'm not sure. Could you summarize again your question real quickly for me, Ken, because you kind of broke
up. Well, I don't think they should have the vehicles running for, you know, like 45 minutes sitting there during their lunch breaks, for example.
All right, gotcha. Okay, Mike Ortega.
So, Ken, I would say that I'd agree with you. I don't know the specifics of why we would do that. I do know that we watch that fairly closely, and obviously I can't speak for Pima County or the U of A, but with regard to city vehicles, the ones that I do know are left running for extended periods are our canine units, where we have the animals that are in the vehicle. But outside of that, just for a convenience or from a convenience standpoint, I would say to you that I'd absolutely agree with you. And if you see that, please let us know, and we'll certainly take a look at it.
Joe, what else do you have here before we wrap it up?
Well, I wanted to just get in for a moment. Are we talking about tobacco next week at the city council meeting?
We are.
So the council is set to vote on a plan to move from 18 to 21 for nicotine for tobacco retailers, as well as those selling the new devices.
Correct. That's correct, Joe. So the council will be considering this coming week increasing or the age from 18 to 21 for those that purchase tobacco and I mean, I don't know what other term to use, but it's the vaping products that are out there. And so that is intended to take effect in January 1 of 2020.
Anything else, Joe?
No, just a bad time to get a vaping product for Christmas.
One quick question about the transit center, the $600 million transit deal. That's a big project, isn't it, Mike Ortega?
It's a very big project, and I think it will not only change the landscape, but will be an infusion of activity in the downtown area. So it's the Ronstadt Transit Center development, and a big part of that is to enhance the transit services that are provided there, but also have a development component, retail, housing, and some type of hospitality. So we're very excited. A lot of folks wonder if it's our investment. It's actually a private investment. The council is working closely with that developer, but it is subject to federal Transportation Administration approval, and so we're going through that process now.
All right, Mike Ortega. Thanks, Mike. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, and thanks for having me, Bill.
Sure. Mike Ortega, city manager. Joe Ferguson sticks around, and we've got Jim Nintzel joining us on the live line after we take the break in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. It's 10:30, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. We'll be right back. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We've just completed our interview with City Manager Mike Ortega. And if you're wondering, well, why did Bill and Joe Ferguson not bring up the Proposition 205, the Sanctuary City measure? Well, City Manager Ortega is not talking about that publicly, Joe Ferguson.
Well, there's a legal fight right now going on between the People's Defense Initiative and city officials, and I suspect that now that there is an outside counsel representing the city of Tucson, Mike and others have been advised not to discuss the issue while it's still under litigation. I know that there was a hearing earlier this week and that there's more to come, I believe Monday. So I think that right now you and I can talk about it, but yeah, we're not going to get much out of the city manager for a couple of weeks, well, or at least until that lawsuit ends.
Let's see if we can get something out of Jim Nintzel, the executive editor. Usually we're pretty successful in getting something out of Jim at the Tucson Weekly. Jim, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. I seem to have a second audio in my ear. I can't quite hear. It's dominating. Oh, I think it's gone. Okay.
Good.
Yeah, it was very difficult to understand anything. I heard a lot of Steely Dan on another radio show kind of in my ear there.
You had Steely Dan in your...
It sounded like somebody's bump music, and then somebody else was talking. I couldn't hear you guys.
Oh, okay. I wonder if
Wonder
if they were playing Ricky Don't Lose That Number. I don't know.
Yeah.
What about 205, Jim? You've been in town a long time. What's your sense on where this thing is going?
You know, I don't have a really good sense of where it's going. I just haven't been close enough to the ground to tell you. I can tell you on the fundraising front, obviously, the folks who are opposed to this are raising quite a bit more money than the folks who are supporting it. And it's almost as if the folks who were supporting it thought if they could get this on the ballot and then just kind of campaign via social media and grassroots and knocking on doors, they would get it over the top. And they, I think, are getting hammered pretty hard by a no campaign. I don't know how much of that no campaign money is being spent, though. I'm not seeing a lot of no stuff, but on the other hand, I'm not a city resident, so I'm
well. I think that my mailbox has been hammered, Jim, by what, at least from one of the campaigns, and I've seen a 30-second spot that's seems to be on most TV channels every night now in terms of ads. So I think they're blowing through their money, but it's you know, the month before the election that you spend it all, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, ballots are obviously out there, and these guys got a little bit of a late start on the no campaign. I would have thought they'd want to get launched a little earlier, but they clearly have the upper hand in terms of having a megaphone to communicate their message. And I guess I have to say that I'm surprised that the folks who are supporting this didn't seem to think through the final stage, which is actually campaigning, in terms of running what would be a traditional campaign, and we'll see whether their grassroots efforts are enough to carry the day. But it's certainly a David and Goliath battle at this point.
Jim, and again, when you put a lot of money and you have a lot of big names, community leaders that come out against something, who knows? There's a certain element, I think, in Tucson that becomes then. Suspicious. Am I on to something there?
Yeah, it's certainly true, but on the other hand, you know, the folks who are opposed to this are bringing a lot of, like, Democratic voices in to work that persuasion angle, and I think that's, you know, it's something that's going to make a lot of people have second thoughts about unintended consequences when they hear the mayor talking about how he opposes this, or Steve Kosachik, or Rahina Romero, or, you know, when you have that kind of a lineup, I think it puts a lot of doubt in people's minds, and it's always easier to get people to vote no than to vote yes on something.
But I have a number for you, Jim, and it's 18,000. 18,000 people signed on to a Sanctuary City initiative to get qualified for the ballot. You know, those people, do you think they're, you know, not going to show up at the polls? Do you think those people have had their minds changed by these no campaigns, by some of the Democratic lawmakers that are out there now? You know, not loudly pitching in front of microphones, but they're absolutely speaking their mind.
Yes, they are. And, you know, I guess that's a question that we're going to see answered on Election Day. But as I said, I think it's you know, the battle is for the people who support this. You know, they have the fact that a lot of people in Tucson are clearly unhappy with the Trump administration and the Trump administration's approach to immigration issues. And that is a powerful thing, but to be able to send a message that is unacceptable. On the other hand, the no people, you know, I have to make that argument that, you know, as much as you might want to send that message, you could find the city is, you know, and this is speculative, but certainly their argument is the city could potentially lose a lot of money as a result of this, and it's not going to do much to change things on the national level.
Let's talk a little bit about fundraising. Joe, in your political notebook today, Tucson Democrats are really outspending their rivals. How much so in the mayor's race between Rahina Romero and Ed Ackerley?
Well, Rahina had a very large checkbook for a long time in terms of fundraising. However, she has hit her limits on public financing, and her campaign is winding down. I think she spent a lot of money in the primary to get this far, where Ed has only raised a fraction of that number, but he's been able to hold on to a great majority of it. So I think Rahina has, you know, several tens of thousands of dollars more to spend in the race in terms of the last final weeks. But at the same time, she's been fighting a candidate who hasn't had to spend money in the primary.
Jim?
Yeah, I think, you know, Rahina's obviously worked hard to establish her name ID throughout. Well, I mean, she had some existing name ID as a councilperson for 12 years, and then, you know, she was able to win that primary pretty handily, I mean, about 50% of the vote. Yeah. And then, you know, she doesn't need that much money at this point. The primary was the biggest challenge for her, I think. And Ed Ackerley is definitely struggling on the fundraising front, and I think just struggling on the get my message out front. You've seen Rahina, you know, I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, Ed Ackerley's best hope, I think, at a path to victory was following the walk-up model of trying to capture, you know, the Republican vote, some of the independents in the middle, and then some disaffected Democrats. And Rahina has really managed to bring the Democrats in behind her. She's not having any trouble, I think, hanging on to the Democratic votes. And she's even winning over some Republican votes, including the guy that pioneered that strategy I was talking about, Bob Walkup, the former Republican mayor who came out and endorsed Regina Romero. And certainly that's not going to relieve the concerns of the Wake Up Tucson crowd. But it does probably go a long way towards reassuring more moderate Republicans and independent voters and certainly Democrats that Regina Romero is not going to immediately destroy the Tucson economy if she's elected.
How about fundraising in some of the ward races, Joe Ferguson?
I mean, the Democrats are just a juggernaut in terms of that. They're relying heavily on the city's public financing program, but they are just outstripping all three candidates running for office in terms of the GOP. It's quite a David versus Goliath kind of struggle in terms of the fundraising numbers. They are, both sides are running as slates now, but there's just a lot of money for the Democrats to put their names out there for signs, and I assume for other forms of advertising that are coming near our TV screens and other screens in the coming weeks.
Jim, let's talk about some of the federal races. We had a U.S. Senate hopeful on our show yesterday, Mr. McCarthy, who is a kind of a self-made millionaire, lives up in Glendale. He's challenging incumbent Martha McSally. He's really struggling fundraising-wise. I think he put in about $110,000 of his own money. And one of the campaign finance reports showed he only brought in, I think it was $10,000. I asked him about it on the show, but he says the enthusiasm is just wonderful for his campaign. So seems like kind of a disconnect. What do you think?
Yeah, clearly the enthusiasm is not extending
to the
people
checkbook.
Who write checks. I think Daniel McCarthy is certainly somebody who there are people within the Republican Party who are unhappy with Martha McSally, who still do not believe that she is a true believer when it comes to Donald Trump. And so they would support a Daniel McCarthy. I don't think that's a majority of people within the Republican Party, but I think for McSally, it makes it harder for her to move away from Trump, and certainly we've seen her, you know, campaigning alongside Mike Pence in recent days. She has said, I think, nothing on this Ukraine thing of substance. I reached out to her office, and there was no response with some questions about it. And you know, she's been a little critical about the mess in Syria, but not nearly as much as some of her Republican colleagues there in the U.S. Senate. And that's a problem for her because one of the reasons she lost was she was too close to Trump. And Mark Kelly's out there. He's raising more money than Martha McSally is. There's polls showing him already in the lead over Martha McSally. There's a long ways to go, but Martha McSally could end up the first Republican to not only lose one Senate race, but two Senate races in Arizona in the last 30-some years.
Is Kelly Ward part of the problem, Joe Ferguson and Jim Nitzel?
Well, I think that, you know, the fundraising numbers coming out of the state party suggest that, you know, the state GOP is struggling to raise the cash that they have in the past. They've long been, you know, a place where they've been funding both the county parties as well as some candidates in terms of giving them help. And right now, those numbers are very dire.
Jim, what do you think?
I think, you know, Kelly Ward is an activist and she's a bomb thrower, but she's clearly not a fundraiser. And so the Republican Party is definitely struggling, and I wouldn't be surprised if, as this continues, you see folks who want to support Martha McSally and other candidates sort of forming a third independent campaign operation outside of the Republican Party in order to spend that money because they don't want to give it to the Republican Party.
How is the Mark Kelly fundraising machine going, Jim?
It's a juggernaut, I think. he has about $10 million in the bank, Joe. Is that $9, $10 million?
That sounds about right. I mean, he's not spending a lot, but he's certainly raising a ton.
Yeah, and I think McSally had like $5 million in the bank, if memory serves.
But McSally has proven to be an astute fundraiser over the years. I mean, I don't know if this is just a lull or not, but in the past, we've seen her raise these kind of dollars just for, you know, House runs. And when it comes to being control of the Senate next year, I suspect we will see even more money come into Arizona.
Yeah, and then, and you know what, the third party groups will probably outspend both candidates. That's certainly what happened in the race between McSally and Sinema, and you'll probably see a lot of that going on in this race as well.
Joe, getting back to the city race, this could energize Republicans to come out with all this push that we're seeing with money spent in the anti, the no vote. Could that help some of the Republican candidates like Ackerley?
Well, Ackerley is an independent, of course, but yeah, I do. I really think that people who would have sat and stayed at home have a reason to send in their ballots. Polarizing is the best word I can describe for Prop 205, and I think that independents and Republicans will vote in this election, and they're more likely to vote for their Republican candidates and in terms of the mayor's race for Ackerley.
What do you think, Jim Nitzel?
I think the Republicans have as good a chance of being on the city council next year as I have of winning the Republican presidential nomination.
You didn't tell me you were going to run.
Yeah, well, you know, they've changed the rules, so it makes it a little more challenging to get on the ballot. In fact, they canceled it here in Arizona, so I don't know that I really have much of a shot. But, yeah, this is not a year for Republicans. There are certain factors that have to be in play for a Republican to win in the city of Tucson. It's not impossible. It's been done before. But I think you have to have a national mood that's anti-Democrat and pro-Republican. I think you have to have candidates who can appeal to folks in the middle, and I don't know that these candidates are doing that, and you have to be able to raise enough money to get your message out, and that's clearly not happening.
All right, Joe Ferguson, what's coming up in the paper this weekend?
There is a great story by my colleague Kurt Pendergast on the border and why the $2 billion are being spent by the Trump administration on border walls might not work the way they want them to. And so I think it's a great read. Whether you read it online or you buy it at the Sunday paper, I think it's well worth your time to pick up.
Do you have any pieces?
I'm going to be having a couple pieces on Prop 205 this weekend, and again on Monday.
Okay. Jim, anything you would like to mention about the Tucson Weekly?
Best of next week, our most anticipated issue of the year, and we are sweating it out here at the office, trying to get this thing out the door by the end of the day. But I think folks will really enjoy our annual compendium of the absolute best of Tucson.
Yeah, that is your big issue, and that's coming up next week. Okay,
next week.
Jim Nitzel, always a pleasure. The best to you and your family. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk with you and Joe.
Okay, and Joe, I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill, for having me on.
All right, coming up here on 10:30, The Voice in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson ably filling in for Matt Russell, who is over in Rome getting ready for his big cruise that was presented by our friends at Bon Voyage Travel. That's going to be a lot of fun. But we're going to hear from Dan with setting the table for the weekend. Weekend Watch is next. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
That means Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org, the complete listing of many great places to stay, some really nice places, some great places to eat as well, several dozen recreation opportunities, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, going up to visit the Cliff Dwellings National Monument. So much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We're very thankful for their support presenting a Weekend Watch. Our normal Weekend Watch host is Matt Russell, who's over in preparing to board the ship, I think, tomorrow for his big cruise. Ably filling in today, Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I do, as you know, I think it probably should be Dan Gibson's Weekend Watch featuring Matt Russell. But I mean, you know, we can negotiate that later.
It's going to be Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch for at least the next three Fridays. So we're always glad to have you on board and set the table for the weekend. And October's the busy month here in Tucson with so many outdoor and recreational things going on. Give us a few tips.
Well, you're kind of in between two weird weeks, right? Obviously, meet yourself, all the stuff happening last week, and then Halloween coming up. But there's plenty to do. Iron John's Brewing Company, who I think the world of John and the work he's doing it is with amazing beer, is opening a new location at 555 East 18th Street. There will be 16 new and stashed beer options, new merchandise. There will be a beer name bingo, some competitions, prizes, TV on all, you know, can watch football all day and food trucks. They'll be there, all day. I mean, until like 10 p.m. You can hang out, drink some excellent beer, enjoy some food, including the new food truck Tosoco will be there, which is some sort of Spanish Sonoran fusion thing. So okay. Worth checking out on its own.
And what was the name of the beer, Bingo or Dingo? What was it?
They're having a beer name Bingo.
Bingo.
I don't know what that means, but who doesn't like Bingo? Bingo's fun.
I'll have another.
Making a comeback.
I'll have another Bingo, please. That sounds cool.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. What else?
Mission Garden does incredible work. I think I've plugged them plenty on this program in the past. October 19th, tomorrow from 3 to 5 p.m., they're having their annual Membrillo Fest. Every year in October, the quinces ripen, and they celebrate Membrillo Fest. It's the spirit of sort of a forgotten fruit. You know, the people don't give quince the respect that it deserves. They're going to be producing quince preserves. They're going to making sweet quince paste, quince products, and a talk by Jesus Garcia, who knows more about plants than nearly anybody, about the plants in their environment. And 4 p.m. live music, only $5, suggested donation. Get to see Mission Garden and enjoy a fair amount of a forgotten fruit.
Yeah, it sounds nice. What about one quick one for us?
All right. I would say also tonight, actually, from 6:30 to 10 p.m., Humane Society of Southern Arizona. Here is my bias. My wife works there. But they're having a free concert on their property. You can hang out with some dogs. Hear some local artists like Greg Morton, Eb Eberlein, John Hawk. It is absolutely free, and there'll be food, drinks, and a raffle.
All right, Dan Gibson, thank you very much. Hope you have a great weekend, Dan.
You too.
All right, Weekend Watch presented by Silver City. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music that you hear on our program at the beginning and the end of the program is by Chris Stefan. My thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, making sure all of our podcasts get up in a very timely manner. John Couch, thanks, John. You've did a great job for us engineering and producing this week. The entire team at Bustos Media Tucson, all of us wish you a safe and a pleasant weekend. Have a good one.